Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The Missouri legislative veto override session has come and gone. We'll talk about what was accomplished in the one-day session a little bit later in the program. But first, that underground burn at the Bridgeton landfill has been on the move for a long time now, reportedly heading toward radioactive waste left over from World War II weapons research at the adjacent Westlake landfill. Missouri Attorney General Chris Koster has released reports indicating that radiation from the Westlake landfill has spread to neighboring properties. Koster also says the underground fire could reach the radioactive waste late this year or early next year. What happens if the two meet? Many are expressing concern about what they feel is a dangerous potential. Others deny a risk. We'll hear those voices on today's program. With me in studio are St. Louis Public Radio science reporter Veronique LaCapra. Dawn Chapman is a concerned resident of the landfill area. Mike Peterson is chief of public affairs for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Before we begin, I should mention that Attorney General Chris Koster, the EPA, and the Missouri Department of Natural Resources did not accept invitations to participate in this discussion. Thank you all in the studio for being with us. Nice to have you. Veronique, I'd like to start with you just to set this whole thing up. Where are we in this ongoing saga?
Well, it's a very complicated story. So for people who haven't been following this as closely as those of us in this room have, I thought it might be helpful just to give a little bit very quickly of background. We're talking about a complex of landfills that are in an old limestone quarry in Bridgeton. So this is just sort of west of the airport and northwest of where 270 and 70 meet. It's a big area, and it's divided into sort of different sections. We're going to be focusing on the Bridgeton landfill, which is a former sanitary waste landfill. That's where an underground fire, some prefer to call it an underground reaction, which is actually more accurate to what's going on. But it's basically a heating underground, and that's happening in the south part of the Bridgeton landfill and is, some would say, moving north. There's data to support that. Republic Services will say something different later on. People are concerned about that fire, both because it's releasing toxic fumes into the air, things like sulfur dioxide and benzene that are causing symptoms for people who live in the area, nosebleeds, headaches, nausea, things like that. They're also concerned because north is an area called the Westlake Landfill, and there's radioactive waste there, as you mentioned, legacy nuclear waste from the World War II weapons program. Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that some radioactivity has been discovered in trees in the area?
Right. So these are there were 9 reports released in early September by Attorney General Koster's office. And among those reports, there are some alarming findings. One was this radioactivity has been found in core samples that were taken from trees around the landfill. The researchers were actually surprised because not only were those trees in the area where the radioactive waste is, but they also found some in trees that were actually south of the landfill, where you might not have expected to find radioactive waste because that's quite far away from where the known areas of waste are.
Do they know if this is airborne contamination or whether the trees grew up with it?
Right. They don't know. Earlier, I can't remember exactly when, but the U.S. Geological Survey did a study where they looked at groundwater contamination with radiation, and they actually found some radioactive groundwater south of the landfill. So the report doesn't say for sure, but you might speculate that it could be coming from the groundwater rather than from airborne material, but they didn't distinguish that.
And very quickly, how long is this underground burn or fire? I'm going to call it a fire. It's easier for folks to understand. It's hot and it's causing a problem. How long has it been burning?
Right. So officially, Republic reported it to the Missouri Department of Natural Resources in December of 2010. One of the reports that Koster released is suggesting that it might have started as much as a year before that.
All right. Let me turn now to Dawn. You live out there. What is life like for you and yours in this area?
It's very scary right now. You know, I was happy to see this report come out, but as Veronique mentioned, those of us that have been involved in this, we're watching the data as it's released by the Department of Natural Resources. We check almost daily for new data. So we've been able to watch the trends in what's happening with the temperatures and the CO data and the emissions coming off the landfill. So we weren't surprised at any of this being released. But for us, it's kind of, I liken it to a freight train. It's like a freight train and the brakes have gone out. This fire is, you know, and it's at this point, you either have to stop that train or you have to clear the tracks. And for us, clearing the tracks is getting that radioactive waste out of the way and removing the people that live right around it.
Well, there may be some very bad stuff floating around in the air. What about illnesses? Has there been any uptick in any health problems?
There have been. You know, the state did a study. It's about a year old, looking at our zip code, and they determined that there's a 302% increase in childhood brain cancers and other nervous system cancers under the age of 18. And where they'd expect two, they have a 2.5, they have seven. And I asked, I said, what does that mean to a mom? Tell me when you'd be concerned. And the response was, oh, we'd be concerned at four. So I said, so seven is, and their answer is significant.
What recourse do you have, if any, really?
You know, we really don't. You know, those living closest, I live 2 miles south of the landfill. I'm fortunate, although it does reach me, the smell and the emissions. But those, there are people that live within half a mile, and they are just getting slammed night after night. And I got to tell you, those kids, there are kids that wait at the bus stop, and when it smells so bad, it gets on their clothes. They're being bullied at school. They're being told they smell like the landfill. I mean, this is really having an impact that a lot of people don't see.
What is it doing, I wonder, to home values?
You know, in that area, it's not doing well. County Assessor Jake Zimmerman did come out and speak with the community, and he said, yeah, we're getting a hit in this area. And the question is, you know, Republic stated the fire's supposed to burn for another 5 years. That is so much to put these people through. They've already been through it. Now this report, if you expect them to wait 5 more years, I don't think the community, and I don't think they can, we can't outwait it. They really need to try and put this fire out if they can.
Well, the community is banded together to a very large degree, and you're having a meeting tonight. Is that correct?
We are. We're having a meeting tonight at John Calvin Presbyterian Church, right on the corner of Natural Bridge and the Rock Road, and it's open to the public. And, you know, we're going to go over the latest findings, but we're also going to give these people kind of a town hall format. There's going to be several elected officials. County Executive Stanger is going to have somebody there. And these people really need to be able to stand up and talk about it. Talk about what this is doing to their family. I'd like them to talk about, you know, one mom has a memory book. And in her memory book, you know, what's your favorite color? What's your favorite band? What are you afraid of? I'm afraid of getting sick from the landfill.
All right. Well, stay with us for just a moment. I wanted to go over now to Mike Peterson from the Army Corps of Engineers. Mike, what is the Corps' involvement in all of this?
Well, we are part of a bigger picture around the St. Louis region. The St. Louis area has a legacy from the early atomic weapons program that affects several locations, Westlake being one of them. A lot of people don't know it, but the original uranium refinement for the atomic weapons program and the Trinity bomb included was refined right here in St. Louis in the northern downtown spot at what is now Mallinckrodt. The sites that this uranium was originally processed and then later stored, including up by the airport, are part of a program under the Corps of Engineers now called the Formerly Utilized Sites Remedial Action Program, or FUSRAP for short. We love our acronyms. So as goofy as it sounds, FUSRAP is a pretty serious environmental cleanup effort. Corps took over execution in 1998 from Department of Energy. To date, we've cleaned up 1 million cubic yards of this radiological contamination, primarily uranium, radium, and thorium. Most of the work to date has been dealing with the sources of contamination, but as Dawn mentioned, we've got it in places around St. Louis from different circumstances. There was the illegal dumping in the Westlake landfill, which is some of this waste. That is part of an EPA Superfund project. The remainder of the waste from the airport site here in downtown St. Louis as well, and Coldwater Creek, which a lot of people are familiar with now, those are all part of the Formerly Utilized Sites program. And then Bridgeton has a third project, and that's under the purview of Missouri DNR. So there's multiple kind of sectors of responsibility. The Corps of Engineers St. Louis District has been cleaning up since 98, basically as soon as the ink was dry on the legislation we were remediating.
Right. A busy part of the county, needless to say, for people looking for these kinds of contaminations. Joining us by phone now is Dr. Henry Royal. He's professor of radiology and associate director of the Division of Nuclear Medicine at Washington University's School of Medicine. Dr. Royal, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
What kind of a threat, if any, do you see as a result of this burn, or whatever we choose to call it, this fire out in the Bridgeton landfills area?
Well, certainly I understand Dawn's concern. The word contamination is very scary to most everyone. None of us would want to live in a contaminated area. But it's very important to understand what the word contamination means. The EPA would describe contamination as being some unwanted substance that's in our environment that has a 1 in a million or a 1 in 10,000 lifetime risk of causing a fatality. These are very, very small risks. You know, in medicine, we don't even think about risks that are that small. The reason that the threshold for calling something a contaminant is so low is because the EPA is not worried about, you know, one contaminant. They're worried about if there are 10,000 carcinogens out there and we let them all get to the 1 in 10,000 risk, then the cumulative risk would be quite great. But even though being told that there are contaminants in the environment is quite scary, the health risk is really very small.
Does that give you comfort, Dawn?
Well, I'm more concerned about the emissions from the landfill than I am the radiation. I'm more concerned with what's being released from the fire than the uranium and the thorium.
Should she be more concerned about that, Doctor?
My area of expertise is really not chemical carcinogens, but again, the same rules apply to chemical carcinogens as apply to radiation. That is that the EPA will say that an area is contaminated with very small risk, like I've already stated.
Right. Would you feel comfortable living in this area?
Well, there are a lot of other issues. I mean, obviously, there are social, political, and economic impacts of all of this. Housing prices certainly are affected. In terms of health risk, I would not be worried about the health risk. There are some unintended consequences of fear. What fear does is it makes us act in an irrational way. If the primary concern is public health, we have limited resources in order to protect the public's health. And we need to spend those limited resources wisely, meaning we need to spend them on the things that are the biggest health risk. If we spend all of our money on little health risks, then people needlessly die from those much bigger health risks because we no longer have money available to prevent those risks.
Veronique?
Yeah, I was interested in whether you feel that there would be a concern if we saw high temperatures either reach or develop in the area of radioactive waste at the landfill.
Radioactive material is very easy to measure at quantities that are much lower than would cause any significant risk. The most important thing to know about is radiation dose. And we have to remember that there are different places in the United States, for example, where background radiation is much different than it is in St. Louis. If you live in Denver, you're exposed to 100 milligrams of radiation more every year of your life than if you live in St. Louis. The dose from the Westfall landfill, we're talking, you know, maybe milligram amounts, much less than what's in Denver. So
even if it were heated up,
I would tell you, if we went from, you know, 1 or 2 milligrams to 100 milligrams, I can tell you that lots of people would be concerned about it. I just don't think that that's going to happen.
Dr. Royal, what happens when this fire, again, I'm using that word, meets the radioactive waste?
You're asking me questions I'm really not competent to answer. I'm not a fire expert, so I'm going to give you basically a layman's answer, and that is that, you know, if the radioactive material becomes volatilized, which means it turns into a gas, it can spread off-site.
But we're not, again,
I actually, just to add to that, that's in line with what some EPA scientists came out with a report where they looked at that very question. And that's what they talked about, too, the possibility of, was it radon gas being volatilized and possibly dust particles as well with radioactive material?
Well, I think there are some people who think that when this collision occurs, there's going to be an explosion.
Well, that's, you're talking about a nuclear explosion?
Well, something that, you know, is going to go bang.
So there's that. That's not physically possible. Radon was brought up. So one of the things, you know, we should think about is if it's radiation that we're concerned about, what the radiation dose is to our children and to ourselves. You know, we're exposed to 300 milligrams of radiation every year. 200 of that milligrams comes from radon in our homes. Somebody mentioned radon. A much more cost-effective way to reduce our radiation dose would be to test our homes for radon and then do remediation in our home to make the radiation dose from radon in our homes less. So there are many other ways one can reduce their radiation dose much more effectively than anything that can be done with the Westlake site.
All right. Well, Doctor, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I'll ask, does anyone at the table here have any questions for Dr. Broyle? If not, we'll move along. And thank you so much, sir, for being with us and giving us the benefit of your expertise. We certainly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks, sir. Veronique?
I do have a question for Mike Peterson, actually, with the Corps. I'm curious about the status of the firebreak, which I know is one of the things that the Corps was consulting with the EPA on earlier.
Yes, we are supporting the EPA Superfund project at Westlake, providing technical review for the isolation barrier, which is that firebreak wall that people are talking about, putting between that south landfill and the area where the rad waste is and the Westlake landfill. We have done some technical reviews. As far as the status of that project and where it's going next, that's something that I would have to defer to EPA on, as it is their project. But we have been consulted. We brought in our experts. Some of our geotech experts and such, our engineering team, have already had a look at some of the early design documents. We're also providing community relations support as well, as Dawn's familiar with.
Absolutely.
So, but I wish I could give you more on that, but that's something you'd have to ask the EPA.
Dawn, is there anything that you would like to comment with regard to what Dr. Royal was saying?
You know, I hear what he's saying about acute exposure. Acute exposure being, you know, a one-time large dose. But you have to remember, this fire's been burning probably since 2009, if you read the reports. And, you know, if it moves way into the North Quarry and it gets to the spot where the radiation is, which we don't know, I have read Dr. Royal's work. And one of the things he's famous for stating is there are no studies out there that show chronic low-level exposure to radiation. They don't exist. And that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about the fire hitting the waste, you know, making these particles airborne, and you go into Target and getting a mouthful. We're talking, you have a community living on top of this. You have 92 homes, them breathing it in for the next 5 years every time their kids go out and play.
Is this analogous in any way to Love Canal? Is it analogous to Three Mile Island? Is it analogous to, well, not certainly not Chernobyl, but some of these other famous names in this kind of discussion?
Lois Gibbs, who was in Love Canal and actually is considered the mother of Superfund, has come out, and she's been working really closely with the moms and with the community, kind of just lending a little bit of emotional support in what we're going through. But she looked at the site, and she, you know, she travels the country now looking at sites, and she said this is the worst site that she has ever seen.
The worst.
The worst. Right.
Has anything like this, very similar to this, and Mike, perhaps you know, and Dawn, maybe you, happened anyplace else?
I can't think of one off the top of my head. It's a unique challenge with the Corps, for example, in our FUSRAP project, cleaning up in residential areas, as was in the news just recently. As we've moved into residential areas, I've talked to my counterparts around the Corps, and when you're encountering this low-dose radiation exposure in communities like this, there's not a lot out there. And as Dawn mentioned, there isn't a great study on what the long-term risk is. We look at what is that, as Dr. Royal mentioned, what is that cumulative risk? If it gives you a 1 in 10,000 increase chance of getting cancer or certain types of cancer, we consider that a risk. And that's really – that's the focus of the FoosRat project, is to eliminate that long-term risk. Not much we can do about the last 60, 70 years. But the next several thousand, I think we can definitely do something about that.
And of course, as long as this thing is burning, continues to burn, the risk has to increase, I would think. It seems to make sense.
Yes. And I mean, that's why we appreciate what the Corps and what the FoosRat program does. You know, they do take that different approach. It's not that EPA doesn't take it, but they definitely have better PR, you know, and they're close and they're local. And these are local people who live in these neighborhoods cleaning up their neighborhoods. And I think that makes a difference, too. But certainly nothing like this has ever happened before. So there are no studies. You can't say what happens when you have a landfill fire that you let burn for 10 years and it's next to radioactive waste and it's encountering radioactive groundwater and that's steam coming out. What happens? They don't exist.
Mike, when we talk about cleaning up, you know, there are various images that come to mind. What exactly do you do when you clean up an area like this?
Well, what the Corps has done typically is we have a huge sampling program. We take the historical documentation that shows us where we might find this stuff. We have a great sampling program to find other places it likely would be, and we can expand that as needed. When we remediate, basically what we're doing is we're excavating out that contaminated soil to the depth, wherever, as far as it goes down, basically, and replacing it with clean fill. All that contamination is then trucked out to – well, we have actually train spurs that are specially constructed to move that contaminated soil out to approved storage facilities.
Well, and moving it and transporting it, is there any risk in that as it goes through my neighborhood?
Actually, that's one of the main things that is a driver in where we're cleaning this up, because historically when this was trucked around between the St. Louis Airport site and Laddie Avenue and several other sites, there was contamination spread that way by careless movement of this material. So we're very cognizant of that risk. We've been cleaning out culverts, ditches, and front yards for years because of the carelessness of the original movement. So we're absolutely careful about that. You'll see us – we test our trucks before they leave the sites we're remediating. We have our own designated rail spurs to make sure that – you know, we have a safe environment for moving this. So we want to make sure that we're not going to exacerbate this problem at all. Our job is to find it and get it out.
Dawn, any concerns that you and yours have about this part of it?
No, you know, we were great. They were great enough to give us a tour of the rail spurs and show us. They've moved. 2 years ago, it was over 13,000 rail cars had left St. Louis through the FoosRat program without any incident. And I know that there's a coalition group out west supported by Republic, funded by Republic, that says don't ship this through our backyard. What they don't, you mentioned Three Mile Island, what they don't realize is we still are the gateway to the west. We received Three Mile Island waste. It came through St. Louis to the licensed facilities that Mike is referring to.
And we've been talking about how the Corps is cleaning up all these other sites, and just to be clear, they're not cleaning up Westlake. They're just in an advisory capacity there with EPA. A lot of people are pushing for the Corps to take over from EPA at Westlake because of this long history of expertise in these kinds of cleanups. Do you know what it would take for that to actually occur?
Well, that's actually been a hot topic of conversation for a couple of years now, actually. And I know Dawn's been a big driver in that. The Corps definitely appreciates the confidence that the public has. That came up in a letter to the DOE from the Missouri Congressional Delegation just recently asking what, you know, if they would look at and reevaluate. And we're in that process. We're looking at what it would take and how we would be able to execute. Realistically, we really do have to look at what our authorities are and what our resources are in-house to be able to take on a challenge like that. None of these projects are simple. And it's the sense of urgency only makes it – the stress levels rise for a lot of folks. We've been at FoosRat for about 18 years now, and we've still got a long way to go. We're only about halfway down Coldwater Creek. So if you look at the scope of just that project, hazarding a guess at what it would take for us to take on Westlake would be premature. So it is being looked at, but at this point, we're still yet to determine how we would be able to take that on.
I guess what I was asking was not so much the financial constraints of doing that, more sort of what authority would be required. Would it take an act of Congress to transfer that authority, or could you and the EPA decide together that you were going to make that change?
USACE and EPA wouldn't be able to make that decision independently. It would be something that would take either an act of Congress or potentially Department of Energy to reconsider it under the FoosRat program.
Dawn, we have to end this segment momentarily, but what's the next step for you and your organization?
We're still pushing for a one-mile voluntary buyout property assurance plan, and we still want to get FoosRat on this site. One of the things we're trying to do is, in addition to Westlake Landfill, we're trying to get them the funding and the manpower they need to expedite the cleanup and testing in North County as well. You know, FoosRep does a heck of a job cleaning up this mess. I just think they need more funding and more manpower behind them.
Well, Dawn, I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking with us once again. I know this is something that obviously you're very, very concerned about, and
Absolutely. You
and your friends and families. Thank you so much for being with us, and good luck to you, and have a good meeting tonight.
All right.
All right. And we're going to ask Mike to stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll be joined by State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal. She has some serious concerns about what's going on in North County and elsewhere, and we'll talk with her about that. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. Joining us by phone now is State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal. Her 14th district includes the area in question, the ones we've been talking about. She's very, very concerned about the landfill fire potential. Senator Nadal, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Don.
Give me some sense of what your concerns are.
Well, I have to tell you that I've been tracking this for about 4 years when my Senate district started including Westlake Landfill as well as the Bridgeton Landfill. And, you know, we have binders full. I've been sharing information with former Senator Dempsey because his district is right across the river. I've been concerned about the water intake centers of North County. There are two of them. But when I saw the report from the Attorney General, that is when I was alarmed and knew that the residents of all of St. Louis needed to be assured that everything was okay. So there are references that are in the report that the Attorney General did with independent scientists where they say that what we have under the ground could end up as Chernobyl. What I am concerned about are the 48,000 tons of uranium that have been spread all over the place. And we're not talking about uranium-4 or uranium-6. We're talking about the most potent uranium in the world. This is the Belgian Congo uranium. And the department, the U.S. Department of Defense, contracted with Mallinckrodt years ago. And part of the Manhattan Project, most of it was done right in the St. Louis region. Now, we're at the point where we're not just talking about radium or radon. We're talking about uranium-235, uranium-238, benzene, thorium, and their daughters. The people of St. Louis, especially the families that live in and around Bridgeton and Coldwater Creek, deserve to have answers. We are looking at the cancer clusters that are in North County. We're looking at the number of children who have double sets of teeth, children who have missing eyeballs, the number of children who have brain tumors. This is not consistent with a normal community whatsoever. And so that's why I think it's important to ask these questions. There are questions that exist such as, is MSD, the Missouri Sewer District, are they testing the leachate? How often are they testing the leachate? Is any of the bacteria, that the good bacteria put into these pumps from Republic Services to MSD, is it tested? I mean, are we looking to see of what the lifespan is of this good bacteria that MSD uses to remediate this? I am concerned because there are people who live in the Spanish Village area who experienced methane. I was right across the street from the landfill last week, and one of the firefighters who I work with, by the way, they're nervous too as well, said, look at one of the puddles, Maria. Look at one of the puddles and tell me if you see any bubbles coming up. And I did. And he said, do you know what that is? That's methane. Really? So then I looked on the state page, Department of Natural Resources, and in the recent past, Republic Services, as well as other landfills throughout the state, there were reports on the problems dealing with methane and how much methane was being released through the asphalt. So we're at a point in time where a lot of people, as Dr. Royal was talking about the scare, I do believe that every single St. Louisan, every single person in this region deserves to know exactly where all of these uranium deposits were poured. We know that the Department of Defense, the U.S. Department of Defense, they hired haulers. We have newspaper articles from 1953 where some of these uranium spills ended up north of the airport in places like Robertson, Missouri, which is no longer existing because they had to buy out those homes because of that spill in 1953. Their children who were playing in those fields and ended up getting sick, so they had an entire community buyout. You know, this is serious.
What is your next step?
Well, I'm investigating this. This is a big deal. This is widespread. I was telling a good friend, I said, I think this may be bigger than Ferguson, and he said it's wider than Ferguson. And the reason why it's wider than Ferguson is when you have that steam and when you have that fire connect with particles, radioactive particles, it becomes airborne. And it's not going to be restricted by one, to one zip code. It's going to be across the area. So anyone who says that we should not raise the consciousness of individuals who are trying to take care of their families, they're dead wrong. We should be concerned about the livelihood of our children who are playing in parks, who are going to their little league games, and et cetera. I mean, these are some fundamental questions every single family should be concerned about. And just because an entity says, oh, we're safe, and we don't have any evidence to back that up, that's like a lobbyist in Jefferson City. Tell us, do this, and then we're expected to do that. That's not how it works.
Let me ask you to catch your breath for just a second, because we have some other people here that might want to respond to us, to what you've said. Russ Naki is Director of Field Communications and Public Affairs for Republic Services. He is with us in studio. Republic Services, of course, is the owner-operator of the territory that we've been talking about. Russ, there is quite a load of points there made by the senator, if you will. And let's just back up a little bit and get your response to some of the things that she has been saying. Well, I've never heard of kids' eyeballs being destroyed by this,
yeah,
but maybe you have.
I agree. Let's back up for a second and just begin with the fact that Ridgeton Landfill is in a managed state. It is safe. It is intensely monitored, not only by the operators at our landfill, but by regulators at county and state and federal levels. There is, as Dr. Royal pointed out, fear out there. And some of that fear is driven by confusion, hysteria, unfortunately in some cases even misinformation. The good senator, she is a passionate advocate for her constituents, and she's done a lot of good work for the community during Ferguson and after Ferguson. But I fundamentally disagree with her comparisons to, you know, of the site to Chernobyl or to the situation in Ferguson or any sort of scalability as the site relates to Ferguson. The fact of the matter is EPA, DHSS, you know, so the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services, a number of experts that have taken a look at issues, ranging from air or water or land, they continue to state that the site is safe, that there's nothing that rises to the level of a public health concern, and that's where we're at. So we are the good senator did mention that there were some expert reports that the attorney general released a couple of weeks ago. Now it should be just pointed out for your audience that we are in the middle of litigation that was brought by the attorney general specific to Bridgeton Landfill. He did have experts that put out reports on a number of issues. That is part of the litigation process. The court sets that schedule. As part of the court's schedule, we in turn will provide expert reports to the court, which will be made public in the middle to the latter part of October. It will address all of these issues, and you'll see that everything that we put out, just as we always talk about, is based in science.
Senate, go ahead, Veronique.
I was just going to say, regarding air quality at the landfill, the Missouri Department of Natural Resources has issued repeated notices of violation for a range of problems with air quality, ranging from sulfur dioxide to benzene. I know you have a new air permit application due on Monday, and you had tried a study over the summer to try to reduce sulfur emissions. They didn't work. what is the status of all of that, and what are you doing to try to address
those issues? Fair question. I wouldn't want to get ahead of a formal response to the state regulator on that. But what I would point out is this summer, as you're well aware, we talked about the latest in a series of comprehensive air sampling events that we've done, five comprehensive ones, seven total. Those sampling events continue to look at just thousands of data points and continue to show that there are no air quality issues that would rise to the level of a public health or safety concern.
Senator Nadal, do you want to jump in here?
I would love to. First of all, I want to announce formally and publicly that I will be resigning from the University City School Board effective September 30th. The reason why is because this issue is so huge. When you look at all the facts, when you look at some of the complaints that people have made, this is beyond what one person can handle. And while I have totally enjoyed serving the people in University City on the school board, and y'all know how important education is, I also believe that the livelihood of every St. Louisan is equally important, and that's where I want to put my time. But I would respond by saying, independent scientists use the term Chernobyl-like event in the Attorney General's report. And for independent scientists to say that, that is a remarkable statement. And so at the bare minimum, the people of Missouri, the people of St. Louis deserve to know what the truth is. We know that the EPA has been restricted. We know that DHSS has had reports. We know that the St. Louis County Department of Health has talked about the clusters of cancer. But what we don't know is why the U.S. Department of Defense has ignored and turned a blind eye on literally thousands of tons of uranium that has a half-life of 1,000 years, and it only gets more potent as time goes on, which is why you're seeing more and more people with cancer. Yesterday, one of the senators who used to live right behind Coldwater Creek, she walked out of the Senate chamber when I was talking, and she said, "I lived right in the backyard of Coldwater Creek. My brother had cancer." The students, she was a teacher as well, and she said the number of students who are dying of cancer is abnormal. It's not natural. And so we're here in Pattonville School District, the same thing, people dying of cancer. Here's the last point that I really want to make. Looking at groundwater when it's tested properly, a 6-inch test is not a proper testing of groundwater, but groundwater that is radioactive can end up with flooding in people's backyards and in their basements. So anyone who experienced flooding in their backyards or in their parks or in their basements, they should be concerned about the radioactive waste that is in there. Again, we're not talking just about radon. We're talking about uranium-235 and 238, benzene, thorium, and their daughters.
We've been through that again. I don't mean to interrupt, but our time is getting away. So what next? My impression was you're going to be conducting a series of hearings. Is that what's going to be happening as your next step?
So here's what we've done after I spoke on the floor yesterday.
Make it quick, please.
Several of our senators came here. We're going to continue to investigate. There are a group of people all over the area who are interested in this, and it's a wonderful coalition of people. We do not have differences, but we are asking for a review with scientists. Senator Emery, Senator Riddle, and several other senators are gravely concerned about what may happen in the next 3 to 6 months. And look, you know, if something doesn't happen in the next 6 months, then I guess we're fine. But you know what? Those people who said nothing is going to happen whatsoever and our health is not going to be hurt because of this radioactive waste in the landfill, I would love for them to be right. But the people of St. Louis deserve to know the facts. They deserve to know the truth. And just because someone is saying there's not a problem doesn't mean that we go along with that. We need to investigate this. This is about our children, Don.
We will be touching base with you to see what kind of progress you're making on this new challenge that you're facing, Senator Marie Chappelle Nadal. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's great talking to you. Any response, Russ?
Again, quite a lot to unpack there. Yeah. She referenced Coldwater Creek. I'm glad that the good senator did so. Let's be, just crystal clear that that is a completely different circumstance than Westlake Landfill. I don't know, Mike, if you'd like to comment some on cold water.
Actually, yes, I would like to address something that the senator said. She mentioned the DOD turning a blind eye to this uranium contamination. The FUSRAP program has existed for decades, and the Corps has only been executing for the last 17 years, leaked 1997. Under the 1998 Energy and Water Appropriation, we were able to take over execution. So we've been cleaning it up since then, and that whole idea of finding where this is, that's what FUSRAP is doing. We're still sampling as we go along Coldwater Creek and finding everywhere that this could have migrated from the upstream source contamination, which is how we spent that initial time on this project eliminating. So DOD and Department of the Army as part of DOD is definitely addressing this issue, and we're doing everything we can to find everywhere this has gone within our project area.
But again, Don, just to be clear, Coldwater Creek, Westlake Landfill, two very different things.
I understand that. We only have a couple of minutes left, and I have a couple of emails and tweets here I'd like to get some response from you to. Russ, if Republic Services is confident that there are no threats to our community from their landfills, why do they not share their data openly instead of repeatedly making our state waste taxpayer money to take them to court to get the data our state needs to get the job of protecting us?
You know, nothing would make me happier than to have your audience go to BridgetonLandfill.com and take a look at every single data point that we collect and make public, everything that is provided to state and federal authorities as part of all the monitoring and operations we do. It's all publicly available.
Right. Another tweet here is, Republic does not like to admit that they have an odor problem outside of the landfill. If this is true, why do they use a big machine at the landfill to spray perfume into the air? That's a new one on me.
They're referring to a sort of a misting system that is used at a lot of landfills to address odor-related issues. But I love the fact that we got that tweet because often what's forgot about in this conversation as it relates to odor is the fact that Bridgeton Landfill sits in an industrial area. And the largest active landfill in the state of Missouri is about a mile and a half as the crow flies from Bridgeton Landfill. So a lot of the residents that sometimes articulate odor concerns, you know, especially in the summer when the winds are going south-southwest, what they're experiencing is something that comes from another industrial or even another landfill and not Bridgeton.
One final question. Why can't this fire, again, I'm using that word, be put out?
Well, if it were – so going back to just junior high science, you know, fire takes oxygen. This is, you know, the reaction. You say fire. I say subsurface reaction. It sits almost 200 feet deep. And there is no oxygen. You're talking about all that waste that, you know, stacks up on top of that. Oxygen just simply does not exist. If it were a circumstance where it did, then you'd be talking about a completely different response. Our response is to manage the reaction and essentially let itself extinguish. It's got to consume waste for fuel. As it does that, it will, over time, self-extinguish.
Right. Some of it is a lot closer to the surface. And also, how long do you expect that reaction to continue?
That's a great question. I wish I had you know, the answer. That's the million-dollar, you know, question. But reactions, generally, industry experts and academics will tell you, can be anywhere from 3 to 7 years of life. But in part, to reduce and control odor, you've got to manage the reaction. And that also then, in effect, prolongs the life of the reaction. I believe it was said earlier that it was first discovered in December of 2010. You know, here we are in 2015. I think it's safe to say that we've got a few more years left of the reaction going. I'd hate to speculate how many, but a few more.
And Republic spent $150 million so far?
Yes, sir. We're $150 million in. We've actually told our investors to anticipate another $190 million over the life of it. But that's why I'm proud to work at a company like this, because it's stepping up and doing the right thing.
We're going to have to let it go at that. I want to thank you, Russ Nocke, for being with us and giving us your company's point of view on all of this. You're taking a lot of heat, no pun intended.
We are taking a little bit of that, but thank you for the opportunity.
And Mike Peterson, thank you for being with us from the Army Corps of Engineers.
Thanks, Tom.
Engineers and Veronica LaCopra, thank you so much for being with us. We have to move
along, Tom.
Because we're going to be talking about that Missouri legislative veto session that started and ended yesterday with Joe Manis. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.